Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. On the Heritage Radio Network, I'm Erica Weitz, your host. So yesterday afternoon, I held a tasting at my apartment for the team on a new consulting job that I'm working on, since you know that now I'm a consultant, right? I love saying that. It was a tasting held to taste the first round of a prototype food that I'm developing for a plant-based restaurant project. I say plant-based because we're not saying vegan, just plant-based, so that people like me, i.e. the right kind of people, will go there once it's opened. You know, omnivores who love vegetables but who tend to be scornful of vegans. That's who we want coming in, not just the fringy vegans and the vegetarians, i.e. the wrong kind of people, but everyone who gives a crap about what they eat, you know, like all 10 of us. But that's all I can say about it because I'm under contract and I have a non-disclosure clause. I mean, not non-disclosure. Yeah, that and a non-compete and all that. So I'm leaving it there, but that's not the point. The point is that I had four people in my fairly large living room in Brooklyn, and I had to turn on the air conditioning for the entire day because it's been almost 80 degrees for a week here in New York, and that's weird. Or if I was, I mean, I am from New York, but as we would say, that's weird. It's weird. It's October 8th, for God's sakes. Halloween is in 3 weeks. Summer officially ended 2 weeks ago, and I'm still wearing t-shirts and shorts outside most days. New York City officially requires landlords to turn the heat on in residential buildings as of October 1st if the outside temperature falls below 55 degrees. 55? I'm not sure we'll ever see that again. So what am I getting at here? I know this is where you all start to wonder aloud, asking yourselves and your loved ones who are gathered around the family laptop every Tuesday night, what deep, insightful point is she getting to? What long and winding road is she taking us down this week to lead us to her land of enlightenment? What revelation about foodiness is she going to bestow on us this week? Well, this one. How can you give a crap about seasonality if the seasons don't exist anymore? Let me explain. So a few days ago, I was leaving my building, and I bumped into my neighbor, Natalie, who's a food writer and an editor and a published novelist, and that's irrelevant, but I mention it because she listens to the show, so I thought she'd like that. But anyway, she had just come from the Brooklyn Borough Hall Farmers Market, and we were chatting, and she was ranting, as we New Yorkers like to do, about how because the weather refuses to be seasonally appropriate, there are overlapping crops now that should never meet each other. What she meant was that at the market, there are still peaches and tomatoes and zucchini, but also pumpkins and hard squash and apples. And she said she wanted to buy the heirloom tomatoes, but she felt like she just couldn't because it's October and it just wasn't right. Now, that kind of sounds like the sort of thing I would rant about, but in fact, it does seem to happen every year. And I don't think it's really such a freaky thing. I mean, if a farmer from 150 miles north already has apples and hard squash, and a farmer from South Jersey still has tomatoes and peaches, it all makes sense, right? But she was damned if she was buying tomatoes in the presence of pumpkins. It just wasn't right, and she wouldn't do it, which is fine. I thought it was funny. It's like when I moved from a big one-bedroom apartment into a tiny studio apartment, and suddenly my sheets and blankets met my pots and pans face-to-face for the first time ever. They had never all lived in the same room before, and they had never actually seen each other before. But Natalie was adhering to a strictly seasonal calendar despite the freakishly warm weather we've had this month. After the coolest September on record, the hottest August on record, the wettest June on record, and of course, Hurricane Sandy and the snowpocalypses. Not to mention the 3.5 feet of snow and tornadoes that just fell in the Dakotas this week, or any other number of national or environmental disasters like that letter that Sinead O'Connor sent to Miley Cyrus, or that whack job girl that Prince Harry is marrying. Talk about post-apocalyptic. Now, my feeling is, in another week or two, there won't be any more tomatoes until next July, at least. So just suck it up and buy them now, or forever hold your peace until next summer. In other words, don't look a gift tomato in the mouth, Natalie. And right on schedule, around this time of year, and again in the spring, my deep introspective thoughts turn to seasonality. I ponder the changing seasons, the natural rhythms of life and nature, the birth and death and decay that is so much a part of life, and the fact that season 4 of Downton Abbey is right around the corner. As I watch my garden die off with the first frost and I need to wear a ski hat to bed when I'm up in the country. Oh wait, those things haven't happened yet. And I may have to postpone the deep thoughts for a few weeks because I'm going to California on Friday for 10 days, and that's the land of seasonless, endless summer, right? So by the time I get back, the temperature in New York could have dropped to, I don't know, below 70? Ooh, chilly. So there's this mini farmer's market on 6th Avenue at Carmine Street here in New York, sort of near the West 4th Street subway station. It's there a couple days a week. It's on the, like, one micro corner of a block that has not yet been turned into a luxury high-rise, which it probably will be by this time next year, populated by, you know, corporate zombies who shop for fat-free apple cobbler-flavored yogurt and bottled strawberry-flavored vitamin water at the mega CVS that already is there on the first floor. But I wasn't even really sure when I walked by it if it was, like, an officially sanctioned farmer's market. It may have been part of the mayor's Get Out the Vegetables campaign, which isn't really called that, but it was this campaign he had to bring produce to underserved neighborhoods. Now, I'm not sure the West Village qualifies as underserved, unless you consider hedge fund families with 3 children, 4 nannies, and a chauffeur-driven Range Rover underserved. But it was good to see the tent and the tomatoes and the greens and all that stuff. It all certainly looked like local, seasonal, non-industrially grown stuff to me. So I looked it up on the nyc.gov website, and lo and behold, it's official. It's an official farmer's market with one farmer. And I learned there are 136 official farmer's markets in New York City now. 136. That is amazing. I remember when the first one opened at Union Square in 1976. The first pesto I ever ate came from Basil, from that market. The first dime bag I ever bought came from Washington Square, just a couple of blocks south of there. The great circle of life continues. So I've had to pass by that market stand a couple of days a week all summer because my restaurant consulting job, see, there it is again, consulting, is on Varick and Downing Streets. It's called Vien, by the way. It's quick service Southeast Asian. The founder of Chipotle came in yesterday and ate there and said that the food was amazing, FYI. But then a few weeks ago, as I was walking by, and I was happy to see the eggplants and the tomatoes and the chard, and it all seemed perfectly up and up and seasonal and, you know, real, totally legit. And then a few weeks ago, I was walking by, and I noticed something really wrong, really amiss. Along with all the seasonally appropriate stuff for sale, there were bunches and bunches of bananas on the table. Yes, bananas. Now, I know climate change is real. You will get no Tea Party-funded science denying here. And I know I had to put the AC on yesterday, and things are getting really weird with the weather. But I'm really, really absolutely positive that bananas can't grow within the 100-mile New York City food shed. And that's what those markets are mandated to be selling, locally grown food. So WTF is up with the bananas. We all see the problem here, right? I mean, you know that bananas can't grow in the mid-Atlantic climate, right? You know that there are tropical species like coffee or mangoes or coconuts, right? Right? Anyone? Bueller? Oh, wait, I see here that Bueller just Snapchatted that he's lip-syncing to Twist and Shout at a parade in downtown Chicago, so let me just text Principal Rooney and tell him that Ferris is there cutting school. See, in just the recent past, there weren't geosynchronous satellites over Chicago monitoring kids playing hooky and making the whole plot device of an iconic teen rebellion film impossible, and thus thwarting the career of a talented young actor like Matthew Broderick. And it wasn't 80 degrees in October, and the West Village was the capital of gays and bohemians and poets, and you couldn't buy bananas at the local farmer's market in New York. What can I say? It was a simpler time. But maybe nobody knows that anymore. Maybe we really don't know that food is seasonal and regional, and that not very long ago in a pre-foodiness era, you'd have been lucky to get an orange for Christmas, or would have eaten cabbage and turnips and old apples all winter until the first peas came up in the spring. Maybe our collective memory is so short that we can't remember a time when you waited for July to eat a peach, or August for the tomatoes, or that an avocado was a really exotic thing that you bought very occasionally. Now that we live in a 24-hour media and news and information world, the rhythm of the seasons and the idea of anything local just seems quaint and a charming, retro, Etsy kind of idea. Something us food-obsessed Brooklynites with our rooftop gardens and beehives and wax mustaches all like to talk about as we pedal our handmade bikes while tweeting about the best pour-over coffee place we just found in the South Bronx, the new hipster secret hotspot. Don't tell anyone. It's seasonality as a lifestyle choice, like being a vegan or like being gay. You don't have to be it. You choose to be it. I choose to be a seasonally eating, ironic glasses-wearing, beekeeping radio host slash consultant. He chooses to be a NASCAR-watching, foodiness-eating, Coors Light-drinking, permanently unemployed but opposed to the Affordable Care Act, boner-supporting douchebag. Sorry, Boehner. You choose to be a juice-drinking, Lululemon-wearing, double-stroller-pushing, self-entitled mommy who wanted to live in an edgy gay neighborhood without the gays because there just aren't enough straight, white, family-friendly neighborhoods in the country, and you just had nowhere else to go because the rich white mommies are so underserved. It's all about choice. This is America, and if we want our Olive Garden bottomless pasta bowl feed troughs to have tomatoes and basil in them in January or July in Albuquerque or Albany, we'll get them. It's what this nation was built on. Complete corporate obliteration of all things natural, calling it freedom and selling it back to us as 7-Up flavored diet vitamin Slurpees. There's an ad running on TV now for Walmart. For my under 30 listeners, TV is what we used to watch before devices and BitTorrent. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. The ad is about how Walmart has really upped their game with their produce and are selling the best, freshest stuff available. How they've contracted with growers to get the best prices, and they're passing those savings on to us. Thanks, Walmart. Now, I avoid Walmart like the plague. In fact, I'd rather have the plague than enter one. But I guess a lot of Americans do all their shopping there. And they buy their groceries there, too, because in some towns, that's probably the one and only option for shopping. And if people are actually buying produce, then that's okay, too. Except that we all know Walmart basically pushes the prices that they pay to their suppliers down so low that the farmers probably can't survive. And I seriously doubt that Walmart is buying from anyone smaller than the biggest behemoth industrial agri-monster anyway. But meanwhile, if they need a real food consultant, I think I can squeeze you in. But back to the ad. So in this ad, they set up a pretend roadside farm stand and have people unknowingly stop there to shop, thinking they're buying directly from Farmer Jones or someone. And they ooh and ah at the quality of the stuff, and they talk about how great it looks. And then surprise! Turns out that it's all from Walmart. Hooray! But if you look at the ad closely, you can see that the array of produce that they are selling could never have come from one farm or even one region. They have lemons and apples and artichokes and potatoes and pumpkins. Now, I know climate change is upon us, as I said before. But I'm not sure in which region of the country a farmer could grow both an artichoke and a lemon and an apple and a pineapple. Maybe in space, or maybe under the dome. You know, the future dome that will surround the Earth and protect us from dangers like being exposed to anything that isn't a commercial for a phone or a car or a bank or a pharmaceutical or a microwavable omega-3 enhanced donut-flavored anytime chicken wing? Or maybe not so future after all. Maybe we already live under the dome. The foodiness dome created by the agri-industrial complex. The dome that gives you the slice of tomato on your burger in December and the strawberries on your cereal in January. The dome that creates the illusion of year-round plenty and availability, but at what cost? It's becoming that post-apocalyptic Wall-E, The Matrix, Logan's Run, Soylent Green world that I love to bring up and up and up. But I only do it because it's so true. And those movies were so prescient. We are living it now, only without all the post-apocalyptic fun, like all the sex and drugs in Logan's Run, or being able to just shoot anyone you want, like in Soylent Green, or having a virtual reality so good you might as well ignore reality, like in The Matrix. And at least in Wall-E, they're in space and have robots serving them. So they had none of the seasons, but all of the post-apocalyptic fun. We're having none of the seasons and none of the fun. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Andy's Biscuits by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz. So speaking of the holiday season, the only way you can tell what season it is anymore at all is by what color the wrappers are on the candy being sold at CVS. If the bite-sized candy bars and gummy eyeballs are in orange and brown wrappers, it's fall. Red and green bags? It's winter. Pink and yellow? It's spring. That's what it's been reduced to. Candy wrapper colors. What sugar-gorging holiday is upon us? That's how you know what season it is. Now, here in New York, where we have absolutely definitive four seasons, hot and humid, cold and gray, cold and humid, and warm and gray. Even that's all been blurred by climate change. Now you only know if it's fall or spring by the smell of puke in the air. If it's fall, the ginkgo trees are shedding their vomit-scented fruits. And if it's spring, the St. Patrick's Day revelers leave their telltale signs on the sidewalk. And don't forget New Year's Eve. It's one nonstop, continuous foodiness shopping season brought to you by Monsanto, Walmart, and Kraft. When I saw the bananas at the farmer's market this summer, I realized that although they seem jarringly out of place to me, they may not have even caused a blink of surprise for most. I mean, of course there'd be bananas. They're produce, right? They're fruit. And they aren't banana-flavored breakfast bars, so you can feel like a real food elitist just for eating them, right? What's so wrong with bananas being sold at the farmer's market, Erica, you snotty foodie elitist, you? They're still fruit, just because they're shipped up from South America. And maybe it's just a matter of time, and not much time, until bananas actually start growing way up north here in the lower Hudson Valley. I mean, look at the temperature this week. My neighbors in my little summer community upstate actually do have a banana tree. in a pot. It's a gigantic potted tree. And they leave it out all summer, and then they drag it back inside their house for the winter. Now, it doesn't produce any fruit because there's nothing to pollinate it, but it has gigantic banana leaves, and it seems to thrive. Now, it's not such a far leap. Maybe it's time to start buying up land for banana farming. Maybe all that land upstate that they're fracking would be really suited to starting banana plantations. There's already a serious threat to bananas in the southern parts of the world because there's a disease that's killing them because of the monoculture of only growing one variety of banana, the Cavendish, and they're predicting a total banana wipeout within the next few years. And if the tropics become uninhabitable due to rising sea levels and the temperatures keep rising up here, who knows? We could be living in the midst of tropical fruit banana heaven within a couple of decades. When we all start running for sanctuary, like in Logan's Run, and we're trapped in the foodiness dome, sanctuary may come more like in a long, yellow, edible form. Soylent Green is bananas. It's bananas. Actually, more like strawberry banana-flavored vitamin-enhanced juice, but you get the point. We're having all of the apocalypse and none of the fun, which is why we have Let's Get Real, to enhance your apocalypse with just a little bit of fun. So if you don't want to have a boring snooze of an apocalypse and you do want to live the seasonal lifestyle, keep tuning in to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network. Now remember that you can always listen to all Heritage Radio shows on heritageradionetwork.com, and we also strongly encourage you to become a member because Heritage Radio is member supported. Go to the website, click on join, and do it. There's nothing free in this world, and what's more worth paying for than this? If you like Let's Get Real, remember you can find me on my website, which is letsgetrealshow.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also find the show on Facebook, and you can also find my show and every other Heritage Radio show ever on iTunes, and that's free. So there is something for free in the world. Thanks to Joe in the control room tonight. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer, Ben Kaplan, who wrote the theme music. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.